From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Mayor Lightfoot on board with looking at licensing officers, saying that manicurists and hairstylists need state licenses. And she says the same for police should be considered.
If somebody moves from Chicago to a suburb or vice versa, that we understand that officer's history, so you don't get to just move from one municipality to another when there's a problem.
It's a way to take it into an independent realm and away from a specific local police department and have perhaps a more independent body look at the problems that a police officer has brought to their job.
Police and policing under scrutiny in the wake of George Floyd's death. One idea that seems to be getting some support in Illinois is licensing police officers. We'll discuss that, and let's not forget about the coronavirus. All of that coming up here on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel is practicing social distancing. From his home, we have Charlie Wheeler. He's an emeritus professor and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield, and also a longtime State House reporter and observer. Joining us as well is NPR Illinois reporter Sam Dunklaw, and our guest this week is Tony Arnold with WBEZ. Tony, thanks for being back with us once again.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And Tony, let's just jump into this. You've been covering what's been going on in Chicago. A lot of the protests have been taking place there and around the state, but really this push on policing and some of these changes, we've been hearing it from Chicago's mayor, Mayor Lightfoot, and also Governor Pritzker. They seem to be open to this idea of licensing. Can you tell us what that would entail?
Yeah, right now, police officers in Illinois are certified, and they can be decertified under certain circumstances according to state statute, things like sexual assault or if they're convicted of other crimes. But you have to be convicted to be decertified. The proponents, the people I've talked to who are in favor of moving to a system where someone would be licensed, like a doctor is already licensed, pharmacists are licensed, even hairdressers are licensed in the state of Illinois. If you do that for police officers, the thinking goes, well, then there would be a new body that would be apparently by the state to oversee any kind of punishment for misconduct of a police officer, regardless of whether that officer's been convicted of a crime or not. And so what that would do is just kind of create this new system outside of any kind of collective bargaining agreement that the police unions have with their local municipalities, and create this statewide standard for what is misconduct. How should an officer be punished? Should their license be taken away for a while? Should it be stripped altogether? It would also create this system where an officer who has misconduct, that would then go on their record, and then it would be, if they wanted to find a new job in another town and be an officer there, well, then that town would know that information before they're hired. That's a system that, in particular, Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot has said is a big problem. This all began a few years ago. I talked to Attorney General Kwame Raoul 5 years ago. He was a state senator and tried to get this passed then, but couldn't get support because law enforcement resisted it and didn't get the votes because of law enforcement's resistance. So I think the question I have is, this whole discussion goes forward, and it's more than a discussion. It's a debate. It's a full throttle debate, right? And laying bare for everyone to see right now, as emotions are still very raw for rightful reasons. I think that this politically, though, and what can get passed is another question that comes to my mind. And I think it remains to be seen what law enforcement will get behind, because what they get behind will go a long way with certain legislators and what ultimately gets passed and signed by a governor.
Yeah, Charlie, it seems as though that's always the issue, of course, is, you know, can you get enough support for some of these ideas? And there's a lot of ideas out there. It does seem likely something's going to happen. There's going to be some type of legislation as we move forward. This idea here, police unions may certainly be opposed to it once again. And of course, you have local leaders who don't want to lose that control. It seems as though this would take a little control away. Do you think this idea could go anywhere?
Well, I think the chances of it happening are a lot stronger than it would have been, say, before the Minneapolis incident where the police officer killed George Floyd, the police unions have a very strong presence in the General Assembly. They have a lot of influence over the members, but I think on this case, the weight of the public opinion is going to be on making some changes in police regulations. There have been other suggestions, not just licensing them, but having greater accountability. For example, keeping police records, discipline records, making them easier to access by the general public, instances of misconduct that have been reported, keeping the files longer, modernize somewhat the use of force statute. Now, Illinois, some years ago, banned the use of chokeholds, but there's also been calls for greater, more intense training. Some people even suggested that police officers should be trained the same way doctors are. Now, that's not going to happen, but I think there will be greater accountability, and I think licensing is probably, in a sense, one of the easier things that the legislature can do.
And Sam, let me go to you, because you've heard from members of the Black Caucus. They are pretty much demanding something get done. In fact, they even some of them had called for the idea of having the lawmakers come back here this summer in an emergency special session. So far, that's not been finalized or even gotten to a point where we're really discussing it in great detail. But there's definitely a movement.
Yes, that's right, Sean. The idea of a special session, of course, being that facts of systemic racism that protesters and, as you've mentioned, members of the Black Caucus have mentioned are so pervasive and such a danger to Illinois, at least in their words, that a special session would be called for. But like you said, we're not seeing any real movement on that just yet. There have been a number of Black Caucus members that have proposed some ideas, and I've also heard it speculated that at one point in time, Black members of the General Assembly held some political power, but now it's almost as though a bill cannot get through the General Assembly without the approval of the Black Caucus. So, of course, they hold a lot of political power in Springfield at this point, and they're using that to their advantage on this important topic. I spoke to Representative Cam Buckner, who had a bill and is planning to reintroduce a bill requiring circuit courts to appoint a special prosecutor to look into any case that involves a police officer killing somebody. That special prosecutor would then bring charges against the officer if necessary. That he cited some cases where the local prosecutor is reticent to charge or to bring charges against an officer because they work in relatively the same department. State Representative Chris Welch, a number of weeks back, offered a laundry list of ideas, reforming the way that Black communities access education and healthcare and housing. There's a lot of COVID-19 relief dollars as well that the representative would like released into communities that have been disproportionately impacted by the coronavirus. There's a whole host of things, and I think that this movement has spurred those members and hopefully their white colleagues to action in a way that we wouldn't have probably seen without these protests.
Well, Tony, it's been a bad week for police as far as the news coverage once again in Chicago. There was a report that some of them had their names and badge numbers covered up during the civil unrest and protests that recently took place. And then also, just over the last couple of days, we heard from the Chicago Congressman Bobby Rush. He announced that several officers were caught on video in his Southside campaign office. I guess the office had been broken into as the violence and looting was taking place in that area. And they weren't necessarily out there trying to find out who was responsible or things like that. Can you tell us a little more about that story?
Yeah, I don't know. So add to that list a photo that went viral of a police officer giving the double bird to peaceful protesters as he was driving away. Look, as far as this this story that came out, it's interesting about Bobby Rush's campaign office. It had been burglarized, and then the officers that responded ended up being kind of this place where they were just hanging out, lounging around, and popped his popcorn, made some coffee, and this is all while at night, while there was looting going on right around the same area and up and down the street, and not too far away in the same neighborhood. It was offensive to the Chicago police brass, who stood with the mayor and with congressmen at a press conference, saying, as I was getting pelted with rocks by protesters, demonstrators, people who were not being peaceful, they were sitting there with their feet up or laying down. And so it was a really a press conference, an announcement that A, brought together two political rivals in that Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot and Congressman Bobby Rush have this really awful history. They did not like each other, but the mayor's response impressed the congressman so much that they buried the hatchet. But then B, I think you have on the other side of this, people who are saying, why is this the incident that is causing the mayor to come out so strongly in favor of police reforms here? This pales in comparison to the significance of people getting beat up or worse at the hands of police officers. And this, here we have some officers taking a break and putting their feet up. Why is that the thing that's driving the change to the mayor? Is she just scoring some cheap political points here? So this is by no means, burying the hatchet with all of the political feuds that the mayor has that she's going to need to pass anything that she wants. But it is significant that it has, I guess, buried the political hatchet for between her and the congressman here. As far as the police go, I think that they're still taking a look at this, in particular the police union, but they seem to be minimizing a little bit the way that the mayor framed what was going on at this scene.
You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford. Our panel this week includes Charlie Wheeler, Sam Dunklaw, and Tony Arnold with WBEZ. And Tony, I'm going to stay with you. WBEZ reported a story this week on what's been called a clout list. Speaker Madigan apparently sending to Governor J.B. Pritzker after his election. Had names of people the speaker promoting for jobs in the new administration. Take it from there. Tell us what was discovered in the story.
This is a story from my colleague, Dan Mealopoulos. And Dan filed a Freedom of Information request, an open records request here to, and what he got from the governor's office, the speaker's office, is that the speaker's office was asking when Governor Pritzker took office, that he was asking or recommending several people, nearly 80 people, be hired by the governor for various jobs, various levels, some in leadership positions, some in not. And the governor... And ultimately hired 35 of these recommendations. That's the bulk of the story here. It's not unusual for legislative leaders to recommend people, but in this instance, what the record showed was that Madigan's office updated this list 17 times with more names. You compare that to the other legislative leaders at the time. There was John Cullerton at the Senate president and Bill Brady and the Republican Senate leader and Jim Durkin on the House side. This list paled in comparison in length. And you've already seen a very strong pushback, particularly on Twitter, from the governor's office saying these people did not need the recommendation of Speaker Madigan to be qualified for the jobs. We hired them in some instances, we didn't even know the speaker was recommending them. These are qualified people who are highly respected, and that's why they got hired, not because of anything that the speaker said.
And Charlie, the governor does have that authority to hire. You didn't feel that the story was really amounting to a whole lot here as far as a scandal in that respect, because this is something that happens every time a new administration comes in.
Yeah, I wasn't very shocked or outraged or surprised by the story. Governors consult legislative leaders, and smart governors appoint legislators from both parties into positions, or not necessarily legislators, but people recommended by both parties, because you want to have favorable relations with the legislative leaders, and if the people are qualified, why not hire them?
Well, Tony, I guess the only other thing I would say on this is that the story, and I think the attention that's being given, may show, again, this toxic cloud that hangs over Speaker Madigan right now, though, that people look at this.
Oh, yeah, it's all about Madigan.
Right.
If this would have been John Cullerton made these recommendations, they may not even have done the story. But the fact that it was Mike Madigan, that's what is the hook. Anything that can reflect poorly on Madigan, the Chicago media and everywhere else is going to grab on it.
Tony, your thoughts on that?
I think you're right. I think that the fact that this is coming from the speaker is certainly adds to the story as opposed to anyone else. But this is also coming. I know we're in the middle of a pandemic and that there are demonstrations almost every single day about police violence. But before this, before the last 3-4 months now, there were stories about Speaker Madigan's office seemingly every single week, and how the federal prosecutors in Chicago have been looking at people in Madigan's inner circle, including his consigliere and longtime lobbyist who's now retired, Michael McLean. No one's been charged with wrongdoing. That remains to be the case. I think there's some questions about what's the status of this investigation, because since the pandemic came, these stories have gone by the wayside a little bit. But I think that all adds to why this story came out.
Well, you mentioned the coronavirus, and certainly it's not gone away. More testing is happening in the state of Illinois. But, Sam, there are concerns still about a second wave. Even some other states are starting to see that. The stock market reacting pretty negatively this week when the Fed announced that it was going to or that this may be a much longer road to get through this than some people would expect. Here in the state of Illinois, right now we're in this phase three, and I guess we could be moving on here by the end of the month. But what are the numbers showing us? What do we kind of know at this point?
So if you look at the IDPH website, the department has been doing a pretty good job at updating some of the key metrics that each of the four regions of Illinois that were kind of split up once the Restore Illinois plan was announced. These key metrics in each of these four regions as to whether or not we're hitting them or we're falling behind. And if you look at that website, in the Northeast, North Central, Central, and Southern regions, we're hitting the key metrics of, first of all, case positivity, which has to be below 20%, and that has to not change on a rolling average over 2 weeks. The hospital admissions have to be down significantly for at least 28 days. There have to be enough ICU beds available. There have to be enough ventilators available. Those things are all tracked day to day. And here we are. We're about almost midway through June. And it appears as though at the moment Illinois is on track to meet all of the metrics that are required in order for us to move from phase three to phase four. Phase four will allow larger groups to gather. There will be some indoor dining that is allowed, of course, all with restrictions. The thing that largely everything will be able to be allowed in one capacity or the other, it'll depend on what it is. The only thing that won't be allowed in that phase will be things like large gatherings, festivals, which, of course, as folks up in Chicago and even down here have reported, is going to cause a pretty big hit to a lot of tax coffers, especially now that we're in summer and we're looking at festival season.
Well, Sam, let me ask you this then. How if we are able to be looking at trying to move to phase four, we've had all these protests and people getting together. There's been concern over that. Is there also concern we could be moving back a step at some point?
It's possible. The governor had made a very somber sort of caveat when he initially announced the Restore Illinois plan. And that caveat was, remember, if any of these metrics that I mentioned just a few minutes ago should rise above a certain level, that level having been, of course, agreed upon and consulted by public health experts, then we will be forced to move back to a phase. If we're in phase three now, and things all of a sudden start rocketing up and we have a huge surge in cases, of course, the data isn't showing that. But if that were to happen, then we would move back to phase two, and that would involve staying at home again. The concern that a lot of folks have been having is that these protests, while largely peaceful, involve some inherent public health risks. Large people gathering together, they're getting very close. We don't know where they've all been. And that, of course, poses a potential public health danger. One way or the other, experts were already concerned about whether or not there would be a surge in the fall. So I think folks are trying to take it as much as it comes.
And I think part of the concern is that you look at some of the other states, There was the Associated Press the other day did a study, and they showed that in 21 states, cases are rising, according to this analysis, and they are states that tended to lift the restrictions earlier. So while we're going down in Illinois, states that have kind of abandoned the social distancing, the wearing the masks, the lockdown, say a month ago or 3 weeks ago, they're now seeing their cases rising. And I guess what we're worried about here is, as Sam said, in the aftermath of the protests, 2 weeks from now, at the end of June, are we suddenly going to see a big uptick in cases? That's the unknown.
And Sam, when we talk about COVID-19, a big issue, of course, is getting college kids back on campuses. We're hearing from some colleges about ways they might do that, having masks worn at all times and some other changes for classes. But that's still a big challenge that they have, and we are only seeing preliminary plans at this point.
Yeah, and those preliminary plans include things like schools offering only single occupancy rooms this year. Across a number of systems. You know, there's a lot of ideas about blended learning where students may come to campus for some time. There may be some online learning as well. It's all sort of very up in the air. But one thing is for sure, the Board of Higher Education is encouraging students to go back to school nonetheless, because a lot of folks are looking at maybe taking a gap year because they're not sure if they're going to be willing to get their bang for their buck, because college is inherently a social place. So we're going to see what happens there come fall.
Well, also happening this week, something that we knew was going to get signed was the state budget. And the budget being signed was the one that was passed in May, when lawmakers came back for a very quick session at the very end of May. And Sam, you covered this. We've talked about it a little bit before on this show, but it's controversial, this budget, because it relies so much on federal money.
We're talking a nearly $43 billion spending plan that accounts for some additional spending from last year that we'll have to do in this next fiscal year. But the large problem that this state has run into, as has nearly every state in the union, is that the tax rolls and tax receipts are down so massively because for months people were largely staying at home. There were entire industries that were shuttered. That sort of money that the state would be counting on at that time just simply did not materialize, and it's unknown as to whether or not it will materialize in any large way. So, of course, the federal government has extended a hand to states, allowing folks to borrow from the Federal Reserve's Municipal Liquidity Fund. And Illinois had to pass a separate statute allowing us to access that money. The law specifies about $5 billion. It could be up to $9 billion, but it looks like we're targeting that $5 billion range, and that is what it's accounted for in the budget. Critics say, you know, that it's because we don't have that money securely in hand, how can this budget be really balanced? Pritzker and Democrats firing back, saying, you know, this is a maintenance budget. The federal government has extended this hand, and Nancy Pelosi, Donald Trump, Mitch McConnell all say it's a good idea, so therefore we should glob onto it as well.
And Charlie, your thoughts on it? We've talked about it before, but you think that they did the right thing by putting the budget together the way they did?
Well, I think this is probably the iffiest budget that I can recall. And not to dwell on how ancient I am, but I've been watching these for like 50 years. And as Sam said, the fact that we're relying on a huge pot of federal money that we hope will come, the borrowing is pretty sure, but the other part of it is we're hoping that there will be billions of dollars of relief approved by Congress, grants to states, and that we'll get a good chunk of it. And I think the decision was made that we will hold everything level. We won't make the kind of cuts that people say, well, maybe you should have cut everything by 5% or 10% or 20%, because most of where the money goes are the kind of services that we need at a time like this. Education gets a big chunk, although these K-12 education is being held level more or less this time around, instead of getting the increase that they were due to get under the new school funding formula that was adopted a couple years ago. We're putting more money into health care, obviously, but everything else is staying pretty much the same. And so the choice was, yeah, we'll gamble on getting this money from the Fed so we don't have to make these draconian cuts, and we can come back and make adjustments later if that doesn't pan out.
And Tony, your thoughts, just about a minute here, but your thoughts on this state budget plan.
The one thing I would add that hasn't been mentioned is that this closes the chapter a little bit on a story I've been covering for several years now, which is inside this budget is settlement offers for the families of those who died of Legionnaires' disease at the Quincy Veterans Home. And that was turned into a huge scandal for the previous governor, Governor Bruce Rauner. It's something that it's not a huge amount of money when you're talking about billions and billions of dollars, but it's significant in that it's from the state here. This is acknowledgement from the state that these families deserve some money for the deaths of their loved ones from a public health outbreak.
All right, let's go to our notes from the field. And Charlie, let's start with you.
Well, the people of Illinois reacting to the lockdown apparently have decided to get high in a greater extent than before. The State Department of Financial and Professional Regulations reported that in May, Illinois marijuana dispensaries had their best month since we started in January, with more than $43.3 million spent on products. $34 million, roughly, was on recreational marijuana to Illinois residents. Another $10-plus million was to people out of state. And a reminder, none of our surrounding states allow the sale of recreational pot, so we have a monopoly in that area, so to speak.
And Sam?
Well, the saga of the legal troubles for former U.S. House Speaker Dennis Hastert continue. WSPY reporting this week that the Hastert case will not start until sometime in the fall, maybe even December, the former speaker being sued for $1.8 million against a former wrestler at Yorkville High School who claims that he was sexually assaulted by Hastert in the 1970s.
All right, and Tony?
Yeah, I just want to highlight the work of another colleague of mine, Linda Lutton, who worked with City Bureau, another publication. And look, the headline says where banks don't lend. That kind of says it all. This story goes into how one Chicago neighborhood that's predominantly white, Lincoln Park, has more home lending loans than the black and brown neighborhoods of Chicago combined. And so it pursues those inequities, the story does. And I would highly recommend people take a look at that.
All right. Now, I want to leave a couple of moments here to wish our colleague Sam Dunklaw well. He's appearing on his final State Week broadcast. He's also wrapping up his time reporting for NPR Illinois and public stations here throughout the state of Illinois. Sam, it's been great to have you on. We do appreciate all the work you've brought us here over the last few years.
Yeah, and it's been really wonderful. I've had a great opportunity reporting for a lot of great folks. It's been really also a pleasure to beam in on this program every week. You can guarantee that I'll still be listening, though, Sean.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Sam. And we do appreciate everybody tuning in every week for State Week. That's all the time we have for this edition. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Sam Dunklaw, and WBEZ's Tony Arnold. You can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org or through the NPR One app. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.